And thank you everyone for hosting me this past week. I really, over the course of the past 2 years, missed PI a great deal. And finally, feels like I'm out in the world again now that I'm here. My talk today is going to be based on these two papers, primarily the first one, which came out in April. This other one came out on Tuesday, and if I have time, I will get to it. If not, please harass me. Also, I'm happy to be interrupted at any point in this talk, and questions are, of course, educational for everyone. So please if you feel inspired, interject. So my collaborators on all of this work are the illustrious Darius Shi, who is a student at MIT, works on an amazingly broad set of things. In addition to metallic quantum criticality, he also is doing dynamics things and quantum info things and something new every week. Another collaborator is Dominic Els, who is your future colleague, so I don't need to introduce him. And Senthil, I think everyone knows and needs the least amount of introduction. Okay, so to give some setup, Fermi liquid theory is really one of the great organizing frameworks in condensed matter physics. It explains the vast majority of metallic systems in nature in terms of a Fermi surface with stable quasi-particle excitations. However, there are still many systems in the world that are not captured by Fermi liquid theory, and we very creatively call these systems non-Fermi liquids. So some examples are the strange metal states in cuprates, heavy fermion materials, twisted materials. Many systems seem to display similar behavior. And these strange metals are characterized by anomalous, quote-unquote, transport behavior, in particular, T-linear resistivity, which many of you are probably familiar with, and also, actually, in some ways, even more mysterious, B-linear magnetoresistance. There are also some perhaps less well-known poster children for non-Fermi liquid physics. One family of examples actually occur in totally bosonic systems. We call these things anomalous metals. So these are metallic states that you find, for example, in superconducting thin films near a superconductor insulator transition. And you find actually a wide metallic phase in these systems. So you see resistivity saturating as you go to very low temperatures, which is surprising in 2D systems because you would think that disorder would kill metallic behavior at very low temperatures. And in fact, some of these systems even have strange-ish transport behavior. So one recent example was an observation of B-linear magnetoresistance in one of these materials. And another, actually, in some ways intimately related example are the composite Fermi liquid states in quantum Hall systems. So this, I'm sure many of you have seen this famous plot of all the different quantum Hall plateaus, but I'll draw attention to, in particular, these funny regions of finite resistivity at even denominator filling, which are unlike the incompressible quantum Hall states, which are topological gapped states of matter. These anomalies at 1/2 and 1/4 are metallic and believed to have strongly interacting non-Fermi liquid properties. Okay. So one unifying feature of most of these systems is behavior that is suggestive of proximity to a quantum critical point. And by which, for students in the audience who maybe don't work on this, by quantum critical point, I mean a phase transition at zero temperature. And in particular, in the context of the strange metals, experiments on optical transport see universal scaling behavior in the conductivity. So sigma of omega nt has this apparent scaling form. So this is a version of data demonstrating this in the case of bismuth 2212, and also in a totally different heavy fermion system, terbium rhodium 2 silicon 2. So far though, there's no physical model of a clean metallic state that's actually been able to display this behavior. This is actually one of the most beautiful and embarrassing features of this problem. It's extremely hard, theory is wide open, but also, you know, experiments are so far ahead of us. They see all this rich phenomenology, and theory has only begun to really begin to scratch the surface of this phenomenon. So the nice thing about quantum critical behavior and the suggestions of quantum critical behavior is that quantum criticality gives us a natural mechanism for killing Fermi-liquid behavior, in particular scattering off of a gapless order parameter, which would occur because the order parameter is gapless as you approach the critical point, all energy scales. So you have some quasi-particle scattering rate, which I'm calling gamma of omega here, which vanishes much, much faster than the energy, killing any sharp quasi-particle behavior. In contrast, in a Fermi liquid, the quasi-particle scattering rate goes like omega squared, which of course vanishes more slowly than omega. Or sorry, more fast than omega. Okay, so the big questions that I've already sort of alluded to, can we understand the ground state physics of metallic quantum critical points and find tractable models that display this physics? And also, in particular, for the purposes of this talk, try to find a clean model with omega over T conductivity scaling. Now, why do I emphasize clean here? In many of the experimental examples, it appears that disorder doesn't play a dramatic role in strange transport. Now, this is a sort of controversial claim, but there are some people who certainly disagree with me on that. However, for the purposes of exploring as theorists the landscape of possible models, I'm going to restrict myself to clean theories. And you know, all of these problems have really vexed us for longer than I've been on the planet. Okay. And in particular for this talk, I'm going to focus on some new non-perturbative results for a simple class of models near metallic quantum critical points. Okay. So the simplest class of models, which I'm going to zero in on for this entire talk, were introduced by Hertz and Millis. Oh no. Okay, we're back. And the basic premise is, or the simplest model that you can write down of a metal near a quantum phase transition, you have some Fermi surface, and just directly couple the fermions to a fluctuating order parameter that's undergoing a phase transition like this. And in particular, again, at the quantum critical point, then scattering with the gapless boson is going to kill quasi-particles at all energy scales. Now, before I move on, I want to emphasize that we're going to focus on these simple models as a guide to trying to understand some universal physics. I'm not trying to claim that these have any relationship to anything that anybody sees in experiment. In fact, we're going to see features of these models that contradict some of the transport behavior seen in experiments and will suggest that an ultimate need for searching for better models, or at least finding ways to augment these models in order to capture the physics that's seen in experiments. Okay, so the setup then in terms of an action, so I have some fermionic Lagrangian, which is just the usual action for fermionic excitations near a Fermi surface. So you have some dispersion epsilon k here. And then the boson-fermion coupling is this Yukawa coupling here, where G has some profile along the Fermi surface and also as a function of the boson momentum. And the boson action is just your standard Landau-Ginzburg theory. So what happens when we historically have tried to study these models? So let's fix to two spatial dimensions. So in this case, these models have no small parameter, very, very strongly interacting. And say that I start at the scale, which I'm going to call lambda mid IR, where Hertz-Millis lives. So I start by trying to integrate out the fermions and consider what the effect of the boson-fermion interaction is on the bosons. You get this, what we call Landau damping behavior, is omega over Q, as a result of the boson becoming over-damped by decay into particle hole pairs. And this leads, in the standard case, to a dynamical critical exponent for the boson. So this is a different scaling for frequency versus momentum of z equals 3. And in turn, if I integrate out the bosons, you get a fermion self-energy, sigma of omega, which goes like omega to the 2/3 here, and leads to a single particle scattering rate that is going to zero more slowly than omega. And in turn, the quasiparticles are killed off. As a result of this, the theory becomes infrared sick. So as I go down in energy, I pass the scale at which Landau damping becomes important. I pass the scale at which the quasi-particles are killed off, which is this lambda NFL. I try to access the infrared regime and use, say, the standard large N RPA technique. One thing that Sung-Sik taught us more than 10 years ago is that, in fact, the fermion propagator then gets enhanced by a factor of N. So you know, this usual large N technique, we try to control the theory, which otherwise didn't have a small parameter, in a perturbative expansion in 1 over N. You do this calculation, you get some correlation function for the fermions, and you find that, in fact, as I go to low energies, the different correlation functions will be enhanced by powers of N, which kills the systematic perturbative expansion. So this observation ignited a great deal of activity in the field. Many, many people have since been trying to find new perturbative techniques that give you access to this infrared regime. So the earliest example is this large N small z minus 2 thing, where you have a non-local action for the boson. There are others, but the main point is that all of these different approaches have some sort of fly in the ointment associated with them. And furthermore, while many of these lead to controlled infrared fixed points, many observable properties such as transport are still very, very hard to capture. So we want to find a way around adopting some particular perturbative ansatz. Indeed, so I just said this, we would like some general non-perturbative approach to theories in the Hertz-Millis paradigm so that we can start in this mid-IR scale, go around all these other complicated scales that I mentioned before, and try to make statements about any putative infrared fixed point. So some hope that this sort of thing is possible came from work that Dominic and Ryan Thorngren and Senthil did a few months before I started at MIT, where they demonstrated that there's an emergent symmetry and anomaly structure shared by all compressible metals, including non-Fermi liquids. And this inspired us then to have this non-perturbative philosophy and to try to make progress with it. So, in particular, the philosophy of this talk, I've already kind of said this, is to start with theory at this mid-IR scale and derive properties that are either valid at all scales below this scale, so just entirely along the renormalization group flow, or sitting exactly at the infrared fixed point. Although this assumes that there's second order transition down here and that nothing especially bad happens. Okay. And what I hope to impress on you is that this really reflects, I think, a broader program in trying to attack these problems non-perturbatively that hopefully will bear even more fruit in the future. Okay, so what are the results that we're going to find? So first is that sitting at the infrared fixed point, in again the clean limit, that the conductivity takes precisely a Drude form for Hertzsimmel's theories. In other words, the real part of sigma of omega is just a delta function times some Drude of 8 plus nothing. So no omega over t scaling business, no non-trivial behavior like what's seen in experiments, nothing like that. And this d here, this Drude weight, is actually fixed along the RG flow for different choices of order parameter symmetry. So it only depends solely on the order parameter symmetry. For the case of Ising pneumatic order parameters, which is a standard order parameter that people consider, the Drude weight is just that of a free Fermi gas. For what I'm going to be referring to as a Varma loop current order parameter, you actually get a reduction in the Drude weight, but it doesn't go to zero. And then for a gauge field example, like what you would expect in the case of quantum Hall systems and the composite Fermi liquid, you just get that D is zero, which makes sense because in the gauge theory, you've sort of gauged away all of the physical charge, and that's what's going on here. Okay, and as a consequence of this conclusion, this means that critical fluctuations will not generate any conductivity. The absence of any frequency scaling here means that in the standard Hertzsimmel's theory, there's no quantum critical conductivity. Okay. The second class of results have to do with susceptibilities. So we can actually compute exact expressions for static density susceptibilities, which are you can think of as the same correlation function as I was talking about previously, but in the opposite order of limits. So you take frequency to zero before q equals zero. In transport, you do the opposite thing. And if I call this n tilde theta, and n tilde will be defined much later in the talk, but if this is the density at Fermi surface angle theta, you find that you get a diverging density susceptibility as the critical point is approached, which is something that was expected from perturbative arguments previously, but here we show this non-perturbatively. Okay. Oh, I should mention also that this is just in the order parameter channel. So there's this delta chi theta theta prime object here. This has the same symmetry as the order parameter. Okay. So how are we able to get all of these results? We're basically going to be doing physics by analogy through this whole talk. So I'm going to be thinking about the individual degrees of freedom at each point on the Fermi surface is basically chiral fermions. So the dispersion for these things, you can just calculate this near the Fermi surface starting from the microscopic model. You get some linear dispersion plus some quadratic corrections. And this importantly is the dispersion of a chiral fermion moving in the direction perpendicular to the Fermi surface plus corrections. And we know from our basic quantum field theory courses that chiral fermions have an anomaly, namely that charge is not going to be conserved then at each particular point on the Fermi surface and needs to be compensated via anomaly inflow with the whole rest of the Fermi surface. And for those who might not be familiar with some of this anomaly language, this is just non-perturbative quantum deformations of conservation laws. If you maybe are more familiar with standard diagrammatic techniques, basically everything that I'm going to be saying here is just going to be a phrasing of some word identity. I call that an anomaly, but if you'd prefer to think about this as just a way of organizing the word identities correctly, that's also completely valid. And in particular, in one dimension, we already know that the chiral anomaly gives you a massive amount of constraints, and the same is going to be true here. Okay. Also, I'll mention that similar ideas have been applied to Fermi surfaces in the past. A natural question is, well, if I have this 1D chiral fermion structure at each point, maybe I can bosonize the Fermi surface. And indeed, this idea was had already landed on people in the 70s. And since then, many people, including my advisor, have tried to augment that procedure and improve it. And in particular, I want to highlight a recent paper on this by the Chicago group, Luca de Lacretas and Damson and Son's students, which is a really impressive work where they're able to do nonlinear response using Fermi surface Bosonization. Okay. And so now I can give a sort of general roadmap for the rest of this talk. So first I'm going to cover how these constraints work in one dimension. And then I'm going to actually tell you the details of the model of Fermi surface coupled to critical boson that I'm going to be using and tell you about its symmetries and anomalies. Then I'm going to actually derive the things I just told you about a couple slides ago. And if I have time, I will discuss the paper that came up on Archive Tuesday about a model which actually does have non-trivial fixed point conductivity. Okay, so starting with one dimension, I start with a free fermion, then my action is just the standard thing. Big A here is going to be a background probe gauge field. And so I can write my in momentum space Fermi surface as just two Fermi points with left mover going out, left mover is here and right mover moving to the right. And this theory classically is going to conserve charge at each of the two Fermi points. And I'm going to call these symmetries associated with this charge conservation U1 left here and U1 right. However, quantum mechanics comes in to mess this up, although really you could just think about this kind of intuitively at the classical level. If I turn on some background gauge field, big A mu, I'm going to get a current going out in one direction. And that means I'm going to get more right movers in my system than left movers. And so charge is not going to be independently conserved between left movers and right movers. By the way, if you're interested, this is what I'm describing is a phenomenon known as a Tuft anomaly, where if I turn on background fields, I break some conservation law. And the way the conservation law is broken is this nice quantized expression in terms of the electric field. By the way, if I'm going too fast or slow or something, please feel free to interject with questions. Okay. So I can reorganize these expressions in terms of what I'll call vector and axial currents. So the vector current is going to be the sum of the left and right moving current. So this is going to be the physical electromagnetic current. Axial is going to be the difference. And importantly, in one dimension, when you do this, you find that the axial density is the vector current and vice versa. So you can see this here and here. And importantly, just taking the anomaly equations from the previous slide, you find that indeed the electromagnetic current is still conserved, but this axial current has this anomalous breaking proportional to the electric field. And now because of this exchange of density and current between the vector and axial currents, what you've then found is that actually this axial anomaly is telling you about transport. So if I plug in Q equals zero to this equation, so then I just have the time derivative term on the left-hand side, JA zero, can be the actual physical current. So then you just have this equation here, but all that is doing is telling you that you have a Drude peak. That's it. This is non-perturbatively just fixing the transport in, everything in a free theory is non-perturbative. This is, the anomaly is telling you about transport. Is the point. Okay. So now, I'm going to do a much less trivial example, which is QED in two dimensions, or one plus one, so one spatial dimension. And I do that by making the big A field in the previous slide fluctuate. So now my action is going to have two terms. It's going to have a Maxwell term and the fermion action. It turns out, actually, that this is an exactly solvable toy model for confinement, which is pretty cool. You can check that A mu mediates a linear potential. So this is, the early studies of this model were primarily motivated by this observation. And so again, this theory is going to have an axial anomaly. I just take the big A from the previous slide and I make it fluctuate. And so I get these same anomaly equations for the left and right moving currents. Hit the wrong button. And rather than immediately fixing transport, what this really tells you, because there's no charge, so it's not really transport, what this really tells you is that I can fix the propagator for a mu exactly. And so I'll just tell you what the answer is. I fixed to q equals zero here for simplicity and for analogy with the Fermi surface example, but actually the anomaly lets you fix the full propagator in QED2, or we also call it the Schwinger model. I'm not sure if I said that out loud. But importantly, you get this non-perturbative answer for the boson propagator, which has this funny pole at frequency square root of g squared over pi. This is quantum field theory's simplest example of a plasmon. Sometimes this g squared over pi is also referred to as the Schwinger mass. And in particular, what this then tells me about the self-energy is that the self-energy is just this universal constant with no other contributions. There's no frequency dependence to it. So this might already seem familiar from, you know, what I told you I was going to say about the Fermi surface problem. And indeed, the main point is going to be that this basically translates full stop to the problem of the critical Fermi surface. Okay. So now back to the problem of metallic quantum criticality.
Hard?
Yeah.
In the 1 plus 1D example, is it known what the leading order four fermion corrections are, like 2K?
Yeah, so I can combine this by adding, so actually 2KF singularities, I'm not sure off the top of my head what happens, but you know, I can say add a Thuring term to this.
Yeah, probably.
And that's like turning on Landau parameters.
Yeah, but yeah. I guess 2KF scattering is more.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what happens with 2KF scattering. Just not off the top of my head, but it should be easy to understand. Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not 100% sure. Okay. So now I'm going to move back to the metallic quantum criticality problem. So the theory that I'm going to work with is taking my Fermi surface and slicing it into a bunch of patches. So I'm going to be making some assumption then that I can analyze the low energy physics in each patch mostly independently and drop some certain class of irrelevant operators. And so I'm referring to this theory where I've done this patch decomposition and dropping of irrelevant operators as the mid-IR effective theory, and it's what's going to live at this lambda mid-IR scale that I was showing many, many slides ago. So this mid-IR theory then is going to be a sum over patches, which I'm indexing by theta, but these are discrete, with the boson action. And this patch action I can express in the following way. So you have this linearized chiral fermion action at each point on the Fermi surface. So W is the unit normal and V Fermi is the Fermi velocity, plus some curvature term, which I'm calling kappa ij. And I'm going to make the assumption that I drop the curvature of the dispersion, but not the curvature of the Fermi surface, which is a standard and consistent with scaling assumption that's made in studying patch theories. And then my boson fermion coupling is going to take this form, and I'm going to assume that the coupling only depends on the particular patch. So it doesn't depend on the momentum within a given patch. Okay. And my boson action, I'm going to write like this. Very important is that I'm dropping the boson potential term. So this is going to be dangerously relevant if I go into the ordered phase. So I try to condense the boson. Of course, you need some phi 4 term. But it turns out that by scaling arguments that at least if I approach the quantum critical point from the disordered phase, that these self-interactions are irrelevant. Okay. Now, to add some additional clarification about what my assumptions are, it's important that I emphasize that I'm not allowing what's called large angle scattering. So this is hopping from one patch to, say, an adjacent patch. So I'm not allowing that by absorbing or emitting a boson. But what I am going to allow is exchange of bosons between different patches. So I can, say, have this patch emit a boson and have it absorbed by some other patch, as long as my fermion doesn't hop outside the patches. So for example, if I have some zero momentum but finite frequency boson, I can use that to communicate between all of the patches. And we'll need to refine that particular assumption a little bit when we ultimately talk about conductivity, but for the most part, we'll only need to make that assumption at the level that I just said, and I should emphasize that it's actually a weaker assumption than what's often made in studying patch models.
Are you stick in two spatial dimension?
Yeah, I'm sticking in 2+1 dimensions.
Fermi surface is circular or not necessarily?
It's not necessarily circular, but I am going to assume that the order parameter lives at Q equals 0. Yeah, but otherwise my Fermi surface can have any geometry I want. And that's encoded in the symmetry of this boson fermion coupling. In fact, that preempts a little bit my next slide. So this dependence on theta here determines the particular theory. So for Ising pneumatic, G of theta is going to be even under inversion. So I go from, say, here down here, and the boson fermion coupling doesn't change. For loop current order parameter, G of theta will have a sign flip when I do that. And for the gauge field example, like in the composite Fermi liquid, you have that there's a subclass of these loop current things where you have oddness under inversions, but G of theta is going to track the Fermi velocity vector. In other words, the boson couples to the actual current. Okay, so indeed, as I advertised, each patch looks like a chiral fermion and has a U1 symmetry so that gives me charge conservation classically on each patch. And this means then that the total classical symmetry is a product of all of these U1s on each patch. However, there's going to be a chiral anomaly, as before in the one-dimensional example, such that now I no longer have conservation of n of theta if I turn on background fields or even the boson, but let's first consider the case without the boson. So that's G equals 0. I turn on a background electric field and I get some current. I don't conserve charge at each point anymore. And then the anomaly equation from 1D generalizes up to look like this, where I have this lambda patch here, which is my patch width. I'm going to assume that it's uniform, or not uniform, that's the same in each patch, although I don't actually have to make that assumption. I'm just compactifying notation by doing that. And then you have this electric field perpendicular to the Fermi surface. I should mention that ultimately when I say compute bosonic correlation functions, I'm of course going to be summing over patches. That gets rid of this lambda patch. Okay. Now, when I turn on G, you might notice that phi looks like it's coupling like a vector potential, and thus should enter the anomaly equation. And indeed, that's what happens. Now I've turned off the background electric field. But now you get this relationship here, which looks very similar to what we had in the Schwinger model. Although one point that, I'll find out if I have a bullet point that says this, but in any case, this J of theta I want to emphasize is the full current at point theta. So it's not just the perpendicular current. This is going to include also the current along the Fermi surface. It's the full 2+1D current vector. That's why it's bold. 2 plus 1D vectors are bold. Okay. Now, additionally, another observation you can make is that if I just subtract the right-hand side from the left-hand side of the anomaly equation, you're deforming then the conserved charge. So now you get some n tilde of theta, which is corrected by the boson. And this thing is actually conserved in the presence of the boson, although not in the presence of external fields. And we're going to view n tilde of theta as the sort of physical or microscopic patch charge density. So this is the thing that, say, tells me what my Landau parameters in the disordered phase are. But that's not going to be a super important thing for most of this talk. Now, in the presence of inversion symmetry, also, I should mention that the integral over theta or sum over theta of n tilde theta and n theta are the same. They just give you the physical full electric charge density for the full Fermi surface. As a technical aside, how I associate n versus n tilde with operators up here is actually dependent on UV regularization. This is a very subtle point. If people are interested in it, I have an overflow slide about it. But the important thing is that for the purposes of this talk, I'm always going to be choosing a regularization where n of theta here, this one that enters the anomaly equation like this, is psi dagger psi. There's another regularization you can pick where n tilde of theta is psi dagger psi. Okay. So now, after all that technical discussion, we're prepared to do an extremely simple calculation to get the first exact result. So basically, this is actually the same as what's done for the Schwinger model. That's why I didn't. When I used to give this talk, I used to do it for the Schwinger model also, but it was very redundant. So I need two ingredients. First is the U1 patch anomaly equation at Q equals 0. So that can be expressed in terms of operators like this. And the equation of motion for the boson, which, because the boson potential is set to 0, only involves the tuning to criticality, which for the regularization I'm choosing happens to be 0. So RC is 0. The temporal part of the boson kinetic term, which in the infrared limit will go to 0, and this term that just involves the fermion density. So now I can just do a substitution of the left-hand side into the right-hand side, because this is an operator identity here. And so what you end up with is the following equation of motion, where now I've added a source term for phi. And I've defined this pi AB to be this funny object here that involves the boson fermion coupling and the Fermi velocity. Turns out that this pi AB is just exactly the boson self-energy. So if I just do standard linear response on this equation, you find that the boson propagator takes this form over here. I don't know why I put this to the right. Should put this on the left. And in turn, this then suggests that the boson self-energy, or not suggests, it implies that the boson self-energy is just this constant at Q equals 0. So a consequence of this is that the self-energy, this mid-IR theory, is frequency independent at Q equals 0. And the statement is going to be valid at all scales below the scale of the mid-IR theory. Now, interestingly, from this expression, it appears that there's a plasmon pole, but that's not really physical. You shouldn't think of that as a new piece of UV data that I'm predicting for any Hertz-Millis theory. Lots of things can happen in the ultraviolet at scales of order of the plasmon mass, or at this, I shouldn't call it plasmon mass, at the scales of order of this pi, and ruin the existence of any stable collective mode. So I should mention then that, importantly also, an implication of this is that the only way you can get non-trivial dependence on frequency is going to be from irrelevant operators, which are not giving me intrinsic information to any infrared fixed point. And this is actually consistent with old expectations from doing RPA in these types of models. Now, okay, I mentioned on the previous slide more or less what happened to RFC, the tuning to criticality, which notably does not appear up here. We can compute the boson susceptibility exactly using path integral arguments in this theory. And you just get this answer, which means that the critical point, which occurs when the boson susceptibility is infinite, occurs as RC goes to zero. This is regularization dependent again. But all these choices that we've made, this is what happens.
Sorry.
Yeah.
The self energy, where is the RC? Did you set it to zero or?
Yeah, as in these expressions up here, I already set it to zero using hindsight from this. Yeah. That was just because I didn't have enough room on my slide. Okay, I already said this, but it, you know, one, I guess, piece of physical intuition you can get from this is that we've chosen a regularization where phi looks like a gauge field. And so that, because gauge fields need to be massless, that's where this is coming from. Okay, so one, I think, very cool thing is that just in these very simple arguments, we computed all these diagrams implicitly. So if I were to actually, if I were infinitely powerful and computed all of these things, then I would find just exactly this answer that I got from very simple non-perturbative arguments. Okay, so now I'm going to do conductivity. And the way that I'm going to start then is first by constructing the current operator. So the current operator has two parts. First is the current perpendicular to the Fermi servos. So that's just this chiral current we met earlier. And then there's a current parallel to the Fermi surface, which involves these curvature terms. And notably, these things have the involvement of the momentum parallel to the Fermi surface. So this is just a contraction of this this matrix here with the momentum operator. So in order to make the claims that I'm going to be making about the optical conductivity, I'm going to argue that J parallel doesn't contribute. And this is motivated by the fact that the critical boson fluctuations have Q much larger than omega, and also only couple strongly to antipodal patches of the Fermi surface. So this was one of the major ingredients in the original development of patch theories for this problem. But one implication of this then would be that there's emergent momentum conservation between antipodal patches at low energies. And if that's true, that means that this is a conserved operator and it's not going to contribute to transport. So if I believe that, then, which is an additional dynamical assumption, then all I need to do is compute the J-perp correlation. So this is all, I guess, what I already said. All right. Well, the J-perp correlator, I can compute exactly using anomaly arguments. So at Q equals zero, I have this relationship between J-perp and the boson field, just coming from the anomaly. So remember, J-perp is V Fermi times psi dagger psi. And this is just what you would get from the right-hand side of the anomaly equation. Now I've added back the external field. And so I can just, from this expression, compute the conductivity by differentiating with respect to big A. So this is going to lead to the following expression. So the first term just comes from differentiating this term here with respect to A. And then this other term, which involves the boson propagator, is what you get from differentiating the expectation value of phi in the presence of big A with respect to big A. So this gives me actually a, I think, fairly beautiful and general non-perturbative relationship between the boson propagator and the current-current correlator.
So what is Wi?
These are the unit normals to the Fermi surface.
Okay.
It's not my favorite notation. It's because we're already using n.
Yes.
So now to explain a little bit more about what these things are, so D0 here is the Drude weight of a free Fermi gas. And so if you convert this sum to an integral, that's exactly what you get, some of the familiar expressions. And these vertex factors here are involving this, the patch width, the unit normal to the Fermi surface, and the boson fermion coupling. Okay, so this is great because since I've already computed the boson propagator at Q equals 0 exactly, I just can plug that answer in. And what you ultimately get is that the conductivity is just a Drude peak. So you see that from the fact that the frequency depends is just this I over omega here. So I take the real part of this, I get delta function. You get this complicated expression for the Drude weight involving the unit normals to the Fermi surface and V Fermi I've factored out, so I've assumed V Fermi here is uniform to simplify this expression a little bit and be able to introduce this trace theta notation. But importantly, you get this reduction of the Drude weight in general coming from the boson fermion coupling. But the second term here only depends on the symmetry of the boson fermion coupling, not its strength. And you can just see that from the fact that there are two powers of g in the numerator and two in the denominator. Okay, so I can consider special cases for what happens to this expression. So for inversion even order parameters like Ising pneumatic, the second term will vanish by symmetry because G will be even across the Fermi surface and W will be odd across the Fermi surface. For the quote unquote loop current case, so inversion odd order parameters, you get generically that the Drude weight will be reduced from the free fermion value, but it's not necessarily zero. And for the gauge field example, it just vanishes. You just plug in V Fermi W here and you find that the right-hand side cancels the left-hand side. So again, like in pi of omega, in sigma, we also find no non-trivial frequency scaling at the infrared fixed point, and that critical fluctuations do not generate conductivity in Hertzsimmelius theories. All right, and by the way, this is a diagrammatic representation of what we're finding. This is the statement that the current-current correlator can be represented exactly in terms of these two one-loop diagrams and the exact boson propagator. Okay, so I want to emphasize that the arguments leading to this point involved a few what I hope are ultimately weak assumptions. So the first is the validity of the mid-IR theory and this U1 patch symmetry, which, remember, was sufficient for deriving the exact expression for pi of omega. And so to do this, I needed to throw out a bunch of things. I needed to throw out inter-patch scattering, so hopping from one patch to another. I needed to throw out the curvature of the dispersion, the form factor variations within a patch. So remember, g only depended on theta, not on the momentum inside a patch, and also the boson self interaction. So if any of these things are dangerously relevant, then the conclusions that I just explained had to be modified a little bit, or potentially are destroyed. It depends on, it has to be analyzed case by case. But in general, if these things are not dangerous, then if you were to add these terms, all you get are what I'll call corrections to scaling to pi of omega and sigma of omega. So you're going to get some non-trivial frequency dependent behavior. But when I go to finite temperature, this won't lead to omega over t scaling. So I'm not going to view those as leading to intrinsic fixed point behavior in the infrared. Okay. The other assumption that I made, which was necessary to get the conductivity, was that I just needed the perpendicular component of the current. So this meant that I had to assume this emergent intra-patch momentum conservation in the infrared. This is, depending on your point of view, maybe a little less easy to swallow than these assumptions, but it's, I think, up until this point, been a sort of standard assumption in the field. And just as a reminder, this is the statement that each pair of antipodal patches essentially dynamically decouples from each other pair of antipodal patches. And if I combine this with the first assumptions, I can get sigma of omega. But I won't need this assumption later in the talk, unless I need to talk about BCS, in which case this will come back. But I think I'm running out of time, so I probably won't have time to talk about BCS. So now I can do the analysis of static susceptibilities, which I'll blow through quickly. Remember, I said that we can compute chi phi phi exactly with, so this is just 1 over r, where r is the deviation of the boson from criticality, which follows from this gauge invariant statement I made before. Turns out from path integral arguments, the mixed susceptibility between phi and n vanishes. Remember, n is this chiral density, so it's psi dagger psi for us. And these results, plus some similar types of anomaly considerations, allow us to compute the static density susceptibility within a patch. And you get actually the same answer for n of theta, the chiral density, you get the same answer as you would in Fermi liquid theory. Free Fermi gas, I should say. I've turned off Landau parameters, but you just get this answer. But for n tilde of theta, which is the conserved density, and so that's what I should expect to be determining, for example, the Landau parameters in the normal state. So I go into the normal state, I have these interactions with the boson, and these things are going to lead to a Fermi liquid state with some Landau parameters. So I just plug in the definition of n tilde theta into all these statements, and I get this final answer here, which has a divergence as you approach the critical point in the order parameter channel. Huh? Was there a question? Okay. So as the critical point is approached in general, Landau parameters will diverge as a consequence of this, again, only in the order parameter channel. And that's consistent with old results from Maslov and Chubakov and from David Moross and collaborators doing perturbative analyses of this problem. Okay, so in my last 5 minutes, I will attempt to explain the paper that came out on Tuesday. So on Tuesday's archive, we studied transport in a theory that actually can evade some of these anomaly constraints. And this is a newly famous controlled theory, so that's motivated by SYK. For the uninitiated, the Sachdev-Yukateyev model. So you take n bosons and n fermions, and then you couple them with this matrix coupling GIJK here, and you say that it's a Gaussian random variable, but in IJK, so it's spatially uniform. And it turns out in large n, you get a controlled fixed point that's determined by the Eliasberg equations. If you don't know what those are, that's not important. The only important thing will be that it's controlled. That you get a non-Fermi liquid fixed point at n equals infinity. Now, importantly, for reasons that I don't totally have time to discuss, because the boson is not coupling in this theory to a conserved density, you can't actually fix the boson propagator exactly at q equals zero. And so this gives you a bit of an out. And it turns out then that pi of omega is not fixed to be a constant. And indeed, you get actually the same answer as in Eliasberg theory, that pi of omega is some frequency-dependent thing here. where Z is the boson dynamical critical exponent, plus 1 over n corrections. And the implications of this are that first, the fixed point incoherent conductivity, for the case of a loop current order parameter, so these inversion odd order parameters that I was talking about, actually will have fixed point frequency scaling. And a perhaps less salient corollary is that the small frequency and large n limits don't commute, similar to the old problem that Sung-sik discovered in RPA. So we can actually do a calculation of the conductivity using what we have perhaps overzealously branded as anomaly-assisted large n expansion. And the memory matrix formalism, which is a standard technique. By anomaly assisted, I just mean we frequently use the anomaly structure of the theory to substitute current for boson correlators, which is still something that we're allowed to do in this theory. And you get a final answer, which has this complicated looking form. But the important thing that I want to call attention to is that you have the second term here, which in the denominator involves big N times omega. That's telling you that the large N and small omega limits don't commute. And indeed, you take omega to be small first, which is the physical order of limits. Ideally, when you do a large N analysis, you want to take the infrared limit holding N large but finite. And you get this scaling answer, which of course is inconsistent with the n equals 1 theory. So while I found something that I think is very interesting, that here is a model that does have non-trivial frequency scaling at the infrared fixed point, in fact, that means that this model has nothing to do with the version of the model at n equals 1. It's a different fixed point. So in showing something fairly interesting, I've also kind of shown that the model is perhaps not telling us what we thought it was telling us. Okay, so I'm out of time, but the big question moving forward, of course, is are there other clean theories of non-Fermi liquids with infrared fixed point conductivity? And for that, we really need better models and to try to be more creative as a field. And I think that's actually exciting. Means there's a lot more to do. And other things that we're looking at are magnetotransport, which actually is in collaboration with Shuyang, who's in the audience. Also finite Q-order parameters, so examples like the spin density wave transition, which are going to have somewhat altered anomaly constraints from what I've described so far, and actually looser anomaly constraints. And also, I've included a bullet about Fermi surface bosonization and incorporating the advances that have been made in that area into this language. So that I'm finished. Any questions are, of course, welcome.
So, just to make sure, so you have N and A, and two have, right? So,
yeah.
Density. So, can I say that one of them is gauge invariant but not conserved?
Yes.
The other is
conserved but not gauge invariant. Yep, that's exactly what it is.
So and then you have two susceptibility. So it seems that one of them is gauge invariant and the other should not be gauge invariant.
Right, but it's a fictitious gauge invariance. It's the gauge invariance associated with the order parameter.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So it's true that in this talk I've chosen a regularization where I treat the order parameter as a gauge field because these theories essentially have an accidental gauge invariance in the infrared. But in the deep UV, it's not there. So the physical charge density, in fact, you can show that if I start from like the microscopic theory that has like quadratic dispersion, what you'll find is that the physical conserved charge density is in fact n tilde.
Okay.
So like in the theory with quadratic dispersion, what happens is psi dagger psi is n tilde, not n. In fact, if you hear this talk from Dominic, the roles of n tilde and n will change.
For me, it looks not easy to understand the divergence of that chi and tilde and tilde chi. Understand it. So in some intuitive way, like because of the non-Bayesian variance nature of that.
I haven't thought about it in terms of gauge invariant. So that's a divergence that will ultimately get canceled by the divergence of the effective mass. So it's something that actually is sort of necessary in the theory. I'm not sure if it can be thought of as connected to gauge invariant. That's a really good question. I don't know.
So, but finally, the compressibility is just the density of state at the Fermi surface, right?
Right. So these series still have a finite compressibility.
So for the boson center in your theory, do you always start with relativistic bosons?
No. You don't necessarily have to. So for basically all of the analysis in the talk, the boson action was sort of a spectator. In particular, the Q dependence of it. So if there's some important omega dependence or some important self interactions that don't vanish as Q goes to zero, then things will get modified. But for example, if I were to consider a Z minus 2 theory, so the tuning Z, nothing here will change.
I see. And one statement of your talk is that the critical fluctuations of bosons will not change the conductivity.
Right, in these models, yeah.
And am I correct to say that, in other words, the conductivity is only like comes from an anomaly of the Fermions, so it doesn't flow or something like that?
In Ising pneumatic, so for the inversion even order parameters, that turns out to be exactly the case. So like because the Drude-Waite is the free Drude-Waite, so you get, basically, what happens is you sum over theta, and you find that you can actually essentially parallel the analysis for a free 1D fermion, and you just get that the anomaly is totally controlling all the transport. For the case of the inversion odd order parameters, that naive answer is not exactly correct. So the boson coupling still plays this role of reducing the Drude-Waite, but it's still, I guess one way to think about it is that because the boson is still ultimately only really mediating forward scattering, it's not going to do anything more complicated to the conductivity than just altering the Drude-Waite. That's not exactly true, but it's basic. Yeah, you can think about it that way.
I think the conductivity is not bound by it. So I noticed that in that formula, something like the Fermi velocity appears here. So intuitively, maybe the interaction can renormalize the Fermi velocity. So that peak would.
Sorry, which object are you referring to?
I think there's the Drude-Waite, the conductivity.
Mm-hmm.
Since that there's a...
Oh, because the Fermi velocity enters? It's the bare Fermi velocity.
It's the bare Fermi velocity, okay.
Yeah. It's the Fermi velocity that you stick in this mid-IR theory. So yeah, the value of that Fermi velocity can, in principle, be renormalized as you flow to the mid-IR theory. But once you hit this mid-IR theory, the statement is that you get these exact expressions that are in terms of the bare Fermi velocity. Yeah, that's a good one. I should have emphasized that. Yeah.
and you emphasize that, oh, sorry. So you emphasize that in that anomaly equation, and the current that appears is the two-dimension current, right,
mm-hmm.
on the whole plane. So I think that parameter associated with higher anomaly rely highly on the two 1 plus 1D Gaussian matrix. So how to regularize a 2 plus 1D theory to have that?
There's an appendix in my paper where I do that. I won't say anything more about that. You can look at the appendices of our paper. But yeah, that worried me for a long time. Yeah.
So, thanks, speaker again.